ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now. And sometimes it can be hard to cut through all the noise from the Canberra bubble. But on the Politics Now podcast, bursting it wide open is our core business. I'm joined by the brightest minds at the ABC to break down the poly-speak and have a chat about what's actually going on behind the scenes. It's called Politics Now, and you can find it on ABC Listen.
There's a revolving door at 10 Downing Street. Prime Minister goes in and then is popped out again. This time it was Keir Starmer. So, can his likely successor, the former Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham, last the distance? Today, Simon Tormey, Professor of Politics at Deakin Uni, on why Britain's woeful economy will make it hard. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Simon, we used to love changing prime ministers in Australia. In fact, we did it all the time. But I think the Brits might have perfected the art. Seven prime ministers in just over a decade. They really like doing this, don't they?
Another way of putting it is that we've got a kind of crisis-prone political system where successive prime ministers have basically either proven themselves to be incapable or unwilling to take the difficult decisions which confront a country which is in kind of relative decline in European and global terms. Mm. And there are tough choices to be made, and some of them are more likely to make it than others.
All right. Well, Keir Starmer, of course, he is the latest to stand outside the door at 10 Downing Street and resign.
The question my party is asking now is whether I am best placed to lead us into the next general election. I have heard the answer, and I accept that answer with good grace. That is why I will resign as leader of the Labour Party.
Now, in his speech, he listed his achievements, he thanked his family.
I shall spend more time on the most important job, being the best husband I can to my fantastic wife, Vic, and being the best dad I can to my beautiful children, who are my pride and my joy.
But wow, it's really brutal, isn't it? Because he actually won an election in a landslide just 2 years ago.
He did. It was a landslide in terms of the proportion of seats in the House of Commons, but of course it was actually quite a weak vote in terms of the overall sort of picture in UK politics. Mm. So Labour only won 34% of the vote on a 60% turnout. So you've got to think that basically one person in five voted for Labour, but the net result was, of course, as you pointed out, 412 Labour MPs out of 650 seats. So it's also a reflection of the very disproportionate nature of how British elections work, that someone who wasn't actually terribly favoured by the British electorate nonetheless managed to, as you say, achieve a landslide. Really, Labour was seen as a kind of relief option after 14 disastrous years of Conservative rule.
All right. Okay. So, Simon, it looks pretty likely that Andy Burnham, the former Manchester mayor who won a parliamentary seat at a recent by-election, will be the new PM. Now, he was actually sworn into parliament just after Keir Starmer resigned.
I swear by Almighty God that I will be faithful and bear true allegiance to His Majesty King Charles, his heirs and successors, according to law. So help me God.
Now, does it look likely that anyone would challenge him for that prime ministerial spot?
Well, it looks very much like Andy Burnham will be the next Labour leader and by extension, therefore, Prime Minister of Great Britain. But it's quite nervy out there in House of Commons land. And of course, there will always be those people who are very sceptical about a kind of coronation. Just Andy Burnham rocks up, having won a by-election last Thursday, greeted by crowds and then becomes Labour Party leader and then Prime Minister. There's going to be people who are saying, hold on a second, that just really gives him untrammeled power. Mm. What about if we put up a stalking horse candidate, as we would put it in the UK, that might be able to sort of make his path a bit choppier than might otherwise look? But it's all a kind of opportunity cost as far as people trying to put up alternative candidates. I think whatever happens, Andy Burnham is going to be the next Prime Minister of the UK.
Okay, and if he's not challenged, he'll be Prime Minister by July the 16th. If there is a challenge, it's a longer process and the PM won't be chosen until the start of September.
Well, it's slightly more complicated than that because the deal is that Starmer has said that he's happy to be Prime Minister until the return of Parliament in September. But, of course, the problem there, you've got a lame duck Prime Minister who really doesn't have any authority for the next 3 months. And of course, if you've got some sort of crisis, then we might have to accelerate that time frame as well. So a lot of these things are sort of in play and all that can change in a matter of hours.
So, Simon, let's just step back for a moment, though. As we said, whoever takes over, he or potentially she, depending on who puts their hand up, will be the seventh Prime Minister in just over 10 years. So we've had David Cameron, Theresa May, Boris Johnson, Liz Truss, Rishi Sunak, and then Keir Starmer. They've all stood at that lectern outside Number 10 Downing Street and resigned. They've all been, it seems, more unpopular than the one before them. At one point, Starmer was the most unpopular PM on record. So why was it that he was disliked so much?
Well, partly circumstance and context. Britain is in a world of pain, a very slow-moving economy, welfare bill going up, ageing population and so on. But I think more fundamentally, really, this government just talked a lot about the failings of the Conservative administration, $20 billion black hole, and very little about the most essential ingredient coming into power. Where's the hope? Where's the vision? Mm. And I think that really kind of hampered Starmer getting on the right side of the British population. And I think they made some very early mistakes in terms of taking away the winter fuel allowance for old age pensioners, failing to get to grips with the small boats issue about illegal immigrants crossing the channel, and never really gave the sense of confidence that he was in control of an agenda. It was kind of downhill almost from day one. So I think that really is at the heart of it. On the upside, I think people do recognise Starmer as a kind of fundamentally quite decent person. Even if he's a little bit uncharismatic and unimaginative, he does come across as at least a kind of stable character. His values are very much things that I think people can recognise as being fundamentally fair and decent. I think history will sort of judge him in a very ambivalent way. A kind of decent person who unfortunately was a little bit out of his depth and made some missteps early on in his administration.
Mm, decent but boring. He didn't really seem to gel with voters.
Exactly.
Well, Simon, let's come in a moment to whether Andy Burnham, if he is successful, can now last as Prime Minister when so many before him haven't been able to do that. But as you mentioned, one of the biggest challenges he will face if he is successful is the economy. Now, it's 10 years on since the Brexit vote this week, and from all accounts, the whole nation is in pretty bad shape, isn't it?
It is in bad shape. I mean, it's not in disastrous shape. Mm. So this is also a bit of a challenge, is that Britain sort of stumbles along. It's still, depending on your reading of the numbers, either the fifth or sixth largest economy in the world. Mm. It can still feel quite wealthy depending on where you are. You know, you're doing the tourist sites in London or going to Oxford or Cambridge or Bristol or some of these bright-eyed cities and you think, well, what's all the fuss about? But the truth of the matter is that the public finances are in an absolutely terrible state. Britain owes £3 trillion, that's $6 trillion to the international markets. We've got 100% debt to GDP. Tax is very high. It's gone up noticeably under Labour. National insurance rises and so on. And Burnham has already said that he doesn't intend to change those tax settings. So he's kind of already sort of boxed himself into a very difficult looking macroeconomic case. The upside is that he was rather successful as mayor of Manchester. And I think this is what the Labour Party is looking at, that in his kind of rather limited budget in terms of mayor, he's attracted inward investment. He's brought a lot of kind of good companies and bright-eyed and bushy-tailed sort of innovation into that city, whilst at the same time being quite true to that social democratic route. So he's brought the bus services and the public transport infrastructure under his control as mayor. So it kind of looks like a sort of a halo story there. And I think this is what the Labour Party and a large chunk of the general population are hoping that he can do, because sprinkle a little bit of fairy dust over the British economy, get things back on track, improve productivity, and hopefully begin to get those kind of wheels of the economy turning again, which will in turn then release a bit more investment into the much needed public sector, schools, universities, health, and so on.
And maybe lift some people out of poverty, because 14 million people in the UK are said to be living in poverty. And there was that analysis by the Financial Times recently that showed, according to OECD data, that if you take out London, the UK's GDP is equivalent to Mississippi's, which is America's poorest state. That's incredible.
It is incredible. And I still think there's a kind of a doppelganger sort of issue here. You know, is Britain a rich country with some poor people in it, or a poor country with a lot of wealthy people in it? And I think what Burnham is also saying, and part of his pitch, is that I understand what the kind of outside of London exterior looks like. I was in Manchester. Manchester does have lots of areas of deprivation, as do areas like Sheffield and Birmingham and so on. So he's very much sort of pitched himself as an outsider, not in that sort of populist way of saying I'm against the elites, but I'm from another part of the UK which perfectly well understands the cost of living crisis. I've turned it around in Manchester. Give me a chance to do this nationally. That's been very much part of his pitch, and he really plays on that kind of ordinary northern roots, Everton FC supporter, someone who's kind of very much at home talking to the ordinary guy in the street, running around in a pair of shorts and all these kind of images, and hoping to use that as a way of kind of building credibility, but also then leveraging that, what they call Manchesterism, a sort of Burnham's ideology for national purposes.
We've been on a path for 40 years that simply hasn't worked for people and places in this part of the world. And this now is the change moment. We have an opportunity to turn the tide, to make the country feel like it's working again, to make people feel hope again. That is the main thing I think we need in this country right now, for people to feel a sense of hope that there is something better to work towards on the horizon.
Well, Simon Starmer is out, Burnham is likely in, but he's still a Labour stalwart, right? Just like Starmer is, and he's going to face exactly the same problems. Can he really be that different to Keir Starmer? Will he actually win over voters?
Well, I think that's the $64,000 question, Sam. He is a very capable political operator. He is very good at sort of triangulating, finding the right tone of voice for the right kind of audiences. I think when you're PM, everything is just scrutinised to the nth degree. I think Burnham is a smarter political operator than Starmer, but of course only time will tell as to whether this actually works out. And of course the key issue is that we're not due a general election until 2029. But of course then they're under pressure to revise that timetable, because what is the legitimacy of Burnham himself? He's just been made an MP, and now he's talking about Prime Minister, and you've got Farage and Kemi Badenoch and all the rest saying, hold on a second, before you do anything, we need another general election in order to give you that mandate and legitimacy. And of course, they're thinking that if they go to a general election, then maybe even Reform wins and we'll see a return of the Conservative Party.
How do you think this will all go down across the electorate, with the rise of people like Nigel Farage?
Well, I think the electorate is very disenchanted. I think that there's a section which is very angry. What Burnham has got to do then is get in front of the cameras, tell a convincing story, and avoid obvious catastrophes and crises. And a lot of that is really, frankly, as we know, outside of the control of the political class anyway. Geopolitics is a very complex thing. Trump is out there tweeting. We've got all sorts of things going on in Europe. So, but I think Burnham will simply, he'll sit down and he'll say, I've got the answers to this. Give me the chance. Give me the 2 years. If I fail, then you get your chance to have a vote.
Simon Tormé is a professor of politics and executive dean of the Faculty of Arts and Education at Deakin University. This episode was produced by Anna John and Bridget Fitzgerald. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Coney. I'm Sam Hawley. To get in touch with the team, please email us on ABC News Daily at abc.net.au. Thanks for listening.